start off with Christopher Citro, who's here as a poetry instructor. Chris is also reading this fall at the Writers' Center as part of our fall season. He'll be with Jeffrey Burgess. He's also teaching the Pro Poetry Workshop this fall. He's the author of a collection of poems, The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy. Awesome title. Chris came to our attention because Judy Carr discovered him in... she had a copy of the newest Best Poets anthology that Dorian Locks had edited. And she's like, I read this guy's bio. He's from Syracuse. Do you know him? And we found him. So, Chris, take it away.
Thank you. Thank you, Phil. My time is up here. And yes, thank you all. Hello. Hi. My name is Christopher. And thanks to Phil, thanks to Georgia, thanks to Downtown Writers Center, thanks to Judy for finding me.
My pleasure.
So, yes, I'm going to read you some of my poems.
Okay.
The first, I'm going to read you from my book that just came out on March 1st of this year called The Maintenance of the Shimmy Shammy. These poems are primarily narrative and a lot of persona poems, so... I want to make sure I don't go over 20 minutes because I don't get waved at in the This is called Plenty of Room Here Under the Big Top. The old man who lives behind our house told us this was where the traveling circus used to sleep. We smiled and believed him, but only a little. Until, while digging in the backyard for a petunia bed, I hit the elephant's back with the shovel. Carefully, I bent down to clear dark soil from the wide, pale forehead. I called to you from where you were prying dandelions out of the lawn with a steak knife, and you came running, the woman I love. You leapt into the hole with me, and together we dug and scraped away to get down to the elephant's feet, its ruby sandals glinting in the bright spring light. Now and then I'd look over and catch a glimpse of your breasts, shiny with sweat and dusted with soil inside your black tank top. You, too busy digging to notice, clearing a stray hair from your eyes now and then. It took hours and hours, but there she was, 10 feet below the lemonade sweating on our porch. One perfect elephant, preserved somehow just for us. Leather headdress encrusted with gold and precious stones. I looked at you, almost unrecognizable now for soil, and you smiled at me, teeth showing like jewels through the dirt. I climbed out of our hole and reached for you. You took my hand. This is called If Only I'd Thought of It. Her whole family hates smoking. She told me one day window shopping for puppies. I had one going at the time and she said, my whole family really hates smoking. I nodded and said, okay. I didn't really know what that meant, though. Did they take turns sitting around the dinner table saying, it's a nasty habit, it's a nasty habit, such a nasty habit. Don't they have any respect for their bodies? They must have been pretty committed. And so was Mona. And so she dumped me. Then, get this. Matt says he sees her out the next night with another guy, and this one's got a cigarette in his face. I couldn't believe it when he told me. The guy was blowing smoke rings as they sat alone together at a cafe. Then he reached out, grabbed the rings, and placed them over Mona's hands like bracelets. I could have done that. This is called A Little Quantum Physics Can Be Dangerous. Are you willing to live in a house with a green couch? Mona asked. Is that the sort of man I married? Michael looked at Mona and did not reply. He knew this was one of those decisive moments that sometimes occur between two people. He didn't want to say the wrong thing and have to live the rest of his life in a universe where he messed up. He wanted to say the answer that would blossom inside his woman like a bouquet of daisies. Then he'd only have to visit the other universe, the wrong one, sometimes at night in his sleep. It would be a dismal place with fear running through it like a greasy black ribbon. When he'd wake from that universe, he'd mumble that he'd had a nightmare and Mona would hold him close to her bare breasts. She'd caress his hair and he'd calm down, awake in the right universe, in a house of love. A house with a couch in it, whose color Michael couldn't for the life of him see clearly from the back of this furniture store in the soon-to-be past, gritting his teeth with the effort to decide. This is a prose poem called Stop Doing That. I can't take you anywhere anymore. Last week we went to the opera. The next day, you wrote one. Do you have any idea how annoying that is? After our trip to Cape Canaveral, the last time I remember being truly happy, there you were, burrowed down in a pile of recycling in the backyard. 2 weeks later, a rumble woke me up in bed. Was it you bringing me the paper and my pipe? Well, no. It was you lifting off. Did you enjoy your little trip around the moon? Some of us never get to see the other side ourselves. We have to rely on other people to tell us just how dark it is. This is called Communication Problems in the Middle Ages. In the Middle Ages, I had not yet learned how to ride a bicycle, and so I was sad, as anyone would be who had to walk everywhere. I'd see the other kids tooling off in packs down the street, off to adventures like smoking and kissing girls and telling dirty stories or breaking windows, and I'd have to stay stuck in the mud in my front yard. In the Middle Ages, most people were stuck in the mud, and they never got clean unless it rained, while they were carrying rocks or digging for roots in a ditch, or else someone threw them in a river. Sometimes they threw people in ponds to see if they were a witch. Everyone knows this, and it's not news anymore. Everyone also knows the joke about if they drowned, they were a witch, and if they floated, they dragged them back out and burned them at the stake as a witch. It's not even funny anymore. And it wasn't back in the Middle Ages either. I saw one or two people get burned at the stake. I thought about trying to put out the fire, but I had only just been grounded and sent to my room without dessert. In the Middle Ages, this was known as trial by jello. I also saw more than one or two people drown in the pond. They probably thought it was a better way to go than being tied to a pole and set fire to. Either way, they knew it was all over as soon as someone grabbed hold of them. In the Middle Ages, my mom used to grab my face to stop me from talking when I was talking too much and wouldn't shut up. When I'd stopped, she'd let go, giving my mouth an extra last twist just to make sure I'd gotten the message. This is the oldest poem in the book, and it's called Typical, Really. It's very short. 1,000 chipmunks woke him up from a deep sleep, and he mistook them for angels, when he could have simply been amazed at 1,000 chipmunks in one place. I'll finish with a couple poems from that book, but I'd like to read some newer ones as well, if that's all right. This is a Syracuse poem. It's called The Mutual Building. The new cafe is pleasant, though cluttered, by all the men and women attracted by low-priced coffee who, when grabbed, release their tails and flee. There's snow everywhere. When is someone going to come and clean this up? If you look up at the top of the tallest building, first you'll see a star, which is lit up at night and nice. Then you'll see some numbers. The first ones are the temperature, which is fine. Pigeons stay all through the winter, walk right in front of you along the ice. They get in your way, but it's fine. The second is the time, and here's the spiky thing. It's always wrong. No one seems to notice, but secretly everyone knows, and everyone keeps looking up and then feeling bad inside. No one needs the wrong time in the sky when we're all just trying to cross the street. A city parking enforcement van says it makes frequent stops, do not tailgate. And even the little bundles of baby being pushed through the slush by women with no hats on their hair are thinking, I thought you weren't supposed to tailgate anyone in the first place. Now what am I supposed to do? Which is fine. Each day at 5:30, the man with the bedroll stands in the crook of the bank building directly above the heat exhaust. The first day, he said, any spare change? The second day, he just stood there with his hand out. It had a mitten on the end. The mitten was a light beige, the same color, nearly, as the stones in the side of the bank. But that's not the bank's fault. The next day, he won't even have his hand out. The day after that, it's entirely likely he'll become a statue. And that's how banks get the lions they have out front. couple work poems. This is called, "We Come Here Every Day, So You've Already Won." I think anyone who works here should be allowed to go up on the roof whenever she wants. It's only 10 floors, and we're certainly all adults. To stand on top of the office with both our feet planted firmly on its forehead, with nothing on our forehead but the big, stupid sky. The white sky. The blank stare sky. The sky that won't help buy groceries. The sky we can't live in. The sky that doesn't keep us warm at night. That isn't a place to go when the work's day is done and everyone shoots out the building's mouth, heading home, or maybe to a treadmill to try to keep from dying, or to a bar to try to keep from dying. Imagine how good that would feel. We might jump up and down a little, but we're not going to hurt the building. It's stronger than we are. That's obvious at this stage. We're not going to harm the sky being so close to it. The sky will just back away to leave us more alone. Resigned to this, we're certainly not going to throw our frail bodies from the stone edge. We're not hunched at our terminals all afternoon, picturing how we'll look, reaching into air either side with the sore, bird-like claws our hands have become. Here's another work poem. It's called, "You Can Keep Your Employee of the Month Award." I need to work out a way to keep my rowboat with me, even at work. Double the amount of productivity you expect me to crank out? Sure, if I can do it, standing in my rowboat, looking off into the distance for a heron nest against the green. Am I working quickly enough? Let me know when you get the chance. I'll be floating along the shore watching midges form new constellations against a sky so blue it makes your eyes squeak. I'm going to have to clock in at the start of my day and clock out before leaving. Just make sure the button can be operated by one end of an oar, with me holding onto the other, leaning out of, but still firmly seated in, my rowboat. Dreaming of Lime Trees is the name I've just decided my boat will be called. I'm probably 1,000 miles from the nearest lime tree, but the sparkling water I just drank is lime flavored, and that got me thinking. You'd never accept that sort of non-linear thinking from an employee, but I did it on my break. Paddling out toward the open water, enjoying my muscles, waking up inside my shirt, the tang of fresh air forcing its way into my nostrils. In 15 minutes, I'll be back, I know you find that hard to believe, at my desk, in my chair, at my computer, with my eyes doing what you pay me to have them do. I will. And when I wobble a little, it's because a rowboat in an office is going to wobble a little. All right, just a few more. This is called Barely Managing the Houseplants Thing. I refuse to give up on the Majesty Palm. Everyone says I was a sucker for buying. You get what you paid for, they say. And I said, I paid $10. And they start to smile. And I lean in, ready to nip at them. I'm like a terrier for my peeps. The protective instinct. I can't make the sun shine out of my face, though. It's cold, and we're north. And the sun is a jerk. And this isn't July. The Majesty Palm and I just have to make it to July. I picture myself in the plant on the deck, buzzing with heat, waving our fronds in almost tropical breezes. I clipped off 4 whole branches this morning, because there's no coming back to life once you're that yellow and crinkly. Someone said it was a marketing scam. They live on riversides in Madagascar, are cultivated in Florida by con artists, then sold for cheap to chumps in box stores. Wegmans, to be specific. Thinking they're getting a deal when all they're getting is a slow demise, no matter what. Someone said mist, so now I mist. Imagining my home, a 1970s smooth pad with one of those egg chairs, cocaine on the coffee table, and thick green palms in a corner. At least I could start with the palm part. The 1970s lasted 2 weeks. Then the 80s set in, and death began its new wave lapping up the stalk. I'm not giving up, though. Someone said, talk to them. So when the cat's asleep, I approach a frond and speak into its green microphone. I love you, I say. Don't die. I'm sorry this isn't Madagascar, the 1970s, or July. This is called Gathering a Few Facts. It's enough on this Monday morning that I can remember the difference between a thorn and a prickle, and it appears as if I'll actually be getting to work on time. It's the same time it always is in this parking garage. Sodium lamp time. Who's walking suspiciously behind the car time? What would I do if someone put a gun in through my window time? Can a travel mug of hot tea work as a weapon of self-defense? I know I wouldn't want any poured on me, but then again, I'm not a criminal. I'm soft. A true thorn is a modified branch, and a prickle is something to do with the skin only. Most roses have prickles, not thorns, which is disappointing on so many levels, and the kind of thing I have to carry around with me as well as manage morning traffic. I'm keeping it together. I'm not harassing other people in their cars. I see us, many of us, sitting behind the wheel for a moment or two, gathering one or two firm facts to ourselves before gritting our teeth and stepping into the streets where nobody loves us. And I'll finish up with, how's the time doing? I haven't looked at my clock. Okay, I've got two more, if that's all right with y'all. Yes, okay. This is called Single Male Seeks Someone Who'll Stay. I opened the door to get the paper last Sunday, and there was a goose standing on the front step. It looked up at me, then took one step to the side, making room for me to pass. So I did. What else was there to do? I walked out onto the lawn, picked up the paper, and walked back to the door. When I opened it, the goose stepped inside and walked into the living room. I stood outside holding the door. Did a goose just walk into my house? I thought. It turned a corner and went into the hallway to the bedroom. I stepped inside. I'm following a goose into my house, I said out loud to no one. I walked through the living room, turned into the hall just in time to see the goose fly up and out a window I had not remembered leaving open. And then the goose flew away, I said out loud to no one. In fact, it was at that instant that I realized finally just how empty my life was. This is my final poem. Thank you all for listening. It's called Free Verse. I figured it'd be good as the last one in honor of the fact that this is the August occasion. Free Verse. He kept sneaking into supermarkets to write poetry on the fresh fruit. He used a magic marker to write stanzas on the apples stacked in pyramids, on piles of heavy oranges. A ballpoint pen will work on some cantaloupes. Not above the use of a stencil, he'd spray paint especially poetic words on the strawberries and cherries. Abscond fits nicely on an apricot. Scirocco can be placed along the stem of a banana, and the average shopper won't know the difference. Until she gets home, that is. Then the questions come. Why an elegy on my mango? Why a formal rhyme scheme for the coconut? Calls to the service department ensue. Then he has to be even more sneaky in order to pull it off again. Once a stock boy caught him by his collar and said, "Dude, what do you think you're doing with that limerick and that kiwi? You are so busted." After pushing a specially installed alarm button with his sneakers, the stock boy looked down at his clenched fist. Instead of a collar, he held a few strips of cloth and a tattered page of Emily Dickinson. All hail the smooth criminals who walk amongst us.